Istanbul 74 presents How Can We All Make It Into the Future? 74 podcast series. On the podcast, we discuss the global pandemic we're currently facing and how it'll reshape our reality and society with opinion leaders and creative minds from all over the world. Let's explore together what the future might bring for us.
Welcome to 74 Podcast. My name is Timothy Varecchia, and I run a consulting firm whose job it is to bridge the gap between the private sector and the public sphere, using culture, education, and social responsibility as means to better systems. So, Brigitte, welcome back.
Thank you. Merci.
How does it feel to be back in France?
I'm always thrilled to be back. I mean, every time I come back, and every time it's the most familiar place for me to be back in Paris. And at the same time, I'm always like, I have the feeling that I just discover things every day. So yeah, I just love to be back.
Does it feel like home?
Yes and no. You know, I've been gone for like 30 some years, not living really in France. So yes, deeply. It does, but still, like, I'm still, it's like the thing about being an expatriate, you know, for a long time. I mean, you find yourself in a position of being a little bit at a remove in both places, in America and in France for me. At the same time, very all the familiar things that are like resonate deeply. Of the quotidian thing, an expression, something you see, something someone says, something you taste.
The groceries you just bought.
Yes, for example. But on the other hand, you. I mean, or it's also maybe of who I am and what I do, that I'm really an observer. So I always like, I'm a tiny bit at a remove because it's not truly the place I know anymore very well. Because, I mean, in 30 years, if you don't live somewhere, the culture, you know, has changed so much everywhere. But if you, I'm keeping up with the American culture because that's where I spend the most time. But in France, I'm a little bit from the deeply, profoundly familiar that affect you in a very emotional way to like completely like, you know, being surprised or... by things that you don't know, even though you should, because that's your place.
But. Right. So it's like it's a constant Madeleine de Proust in essence.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, you find things that resonate deeply, and then there is other things that are totally strange and unusual, even though for anybody that has lived in France all along, it's just like that's the quotidian. So
you and I met traveling, and I think so much of our friendship has to do with the fact that we both feel uprooted, but also like permanent nomads. And I've over the last year, you and I have talked a lot about how that seems to be evolving as we age and as the world around us changes. How has your need for Europe changed, for instance, over the last year?
My need to...
To be in Europe, your longing to be in Europe.
Well, I mean, I really feel like very drawn back to Europe, for sure. Not just to France, as you write, just to Europe. And I feel less, because I've traveled all my life now, but usually travel far away. And... I traveled extensively. I mean, when in the last period of my life, I was traveling 9 months out of 12, you know, so, and also for 25 years, I was the only people I was ever under contract with was Condé Nast Traveler, which was a very good magazine at the beginning. And so I was traveling for them to extraordinary places and faraway places. And now I feel, and I had them, I mean, I was incredibly lucky for that period. But now I feel that I'm more drawn to Europe and I'm more drawn to things that are close by and things that I don't know, places that I don't know, that I, because it's almost like you always want to see what's more mm-hmm. exotic, different, you know, far away. And now I feel like I'm more interested in what's just next door, you know, like.
Right. And I feel like there's also a need for you and the both of us to somehow explore part of the history that we left behind, you know, mm-hmm. you with Le Canet and, you know, obviously what you're doing with your home there and,
yeah.
and with Marion and, you know, myself in Normandy, which, mm-hmm. you know, you had a chance to visit. Do you feel like that's also something that has, a time has come for
yeah.
when we've traveled so much? I definitely felt like yeah. there was a need to come back yeah. and re-explore that
yeah.
and reclaim that part of yeah. ourselves.
Absolutely. I mean, but all of that, what we are talking about is after what we just all lived for the last year and a half, you know, that was all precipitated because even though we were talking about going back to spend time more in my case, in, you know, in our family house in the south of France or travel less, work less, at least not at the same crazy speed, you know. I don't think I would ever really done it, you know, in a successful way if I had been left to my own device. But because it was like this forced interruption, you know, it suddenly gave me the time, as most people that are in a privileged position to actually use that forced. Interruption to use it for thinking and really looking at the way you live. And you have out of that you have option. You know, you have choices and the choice for me was like evident that I had to live very differently and I had to spend time more time with my friend, with my family, with the place which has been in my life always, but I spend like maybe at the most 2 weeks a year, you know. And now because of the kind of life I had, I never had the sense of everyday life. I never had the sense of the quotidien or seasons or
routines,
anything.
Right.
Yeah, I've missed every single birthday and wedding and event in anybody's life around me because I was always more preoccupied to pursue my work. And that was always like my priority for everything. And now I feel, no, actually, I would like to do all the quotidian things.
Do you think that this hyperactivity has something to do with creativity? Because I definitely feel like for myself, you know, having always too many initiatives, too many ventures, too many things that I want to do, too many projects, too many phone calls to make, and too many travels, you know, to look forward to has been fuel for moving on with my life. Do you fear that slowing down might impact that curiosity and that creativity?
I really don't think so. Because I think that's the same. I mean, it's just like switching your energy in another direction in a way. I mean, it does not mean that you're less curious or less interested or less open, but you just like discover another field, because you realize no matter how open and we are exposed to so many things, we have so many opportunities in the kind of work we do, but it's only like one small, very, very small thing still. As soon as you look outside of what you know, there is like millions of other things, millions of other life, culture, way to be, way to understand where, I mean, so many things. Like I've not really read in depth, you know, in a long time. I mean, I'm just reading long pieces in magazine and in newspaper. I'm like obsessed with the news. But I just like the pleasure to really find yourself getting into a book, you know, which I had actually not done in a long time, you know, or just like pay attention to the land and the garden and the season and just like spend the time and not feeling like something else is waiting, you know, that has to be attended to. And you have to interrupt that and that because you are following like some mad schedule, I loved. I loved every moment of it, but suddenly it just like, I somehow got to the end of that and realized, oh, but because I mean, in our conversation, you know, I'm much older than you, so I'm at a different stage too. And I realized for the first time that I had a finite amount of time, no matter, so even if you are super optimistic, there is a finite time to your time on Earth. So there is so many other things. In fact, it's not, I don't think it will curtail the curiosity or anything, but it just like will switch it to another part that you have not had time to, that you have overlooked, in fact. And for all I know, that's more interesting or more important, you know, and I'm going to discover that.
I always, you know, refer to you as my teenage friend, because I think that your energy, precisely your energy and your curiosity is always relentless, you know, and I, you know, I've had the chance to meet very few, but a few people in my life who, you know, retain that energy throughout their life. And I think that intellectual curiosity is really something that's hard to maintain. You know, I think that it's so easy to put yourself to sleep, you know, precisely to read the same books and to meet the same people. But, you know, I'm always so impressed by your curiosity and your candor for new things, you know, whether it be photographing a doorknob, you know, on a Parisian street, or, you know, meeting a new, you know, new form of talent. Has that always been the case?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's like within your, I think it's within your character, within your personality, within, like that's one great thing that I was given, you know, and maybe you refine it in a way, or you focus it even more, you know, as you learn. And also, I mean, the great luck of being given everything through your work, that not only you love what you do, but your work affords you all these interesting avenues, you know, to explore all the time. And that's what you are talking about, like when we had so many things that were interesting, and it was very hard to actually, even though I was saying no to quite a few things, but there was still enough extraordinary thing that I did not want to miss for any reason. And so I don't think that will go away. I mean, as I said, it will be focused on other things that maybe do not have the same result, in the sense of it's not focused through work. It does not have to be work. It will be other type of.
So in essence, photography really became, I mean, how early did you understand that photography would be the tool that you would use to explore the world and people? Because I really see you as an explorer of places, but also an explorer of people, you know, seeing your photography. And I was a fan long before I met you, you know, it's really an exploration to people's depth. And I see now that we do a lot of travels together, I see that you have the same approach to places. How early did you understand that photography would allow you to do that?
I don't know if I don't really remember or realized it, maybe. I'm not sure if I ever like really, because I was never like really so much thinking, you know, than about what I was feeling, I think and that's the difference now that I feel in the way I hope to live now, is that instead of being constantly in reacting and being stimulating by the outside that is endlessly interesting, you know, people and places, and I feel like now I need to have a little more of reflection, you know, instead of being like always on, pursuing things and reacting, and that I need to pay a little attention to just go a little more in depth. Because also, I was working so much until this year that I always there was no time in between to really realize and as I say, process what you had lived through, or the emotions that had been provoked, or the pleasures, the interest, what you had learned. I mean, because you were already on to something else, you know. So I think it's just like a different pace, a different scope, but maybe deeper, but not as wide, you know. I don't know. Mm-hmm. We'll see. That's the idea, at least.
And do you think that that with hyperactivity and in the way that, you know, the two of us have built our lives in terms of, you know, travels and experiences and always wanting to see and learn more, there's this notion of escaping as mm-hmm. well,
absolutely.
Because there's definitely compromises that we've made and things that we've left behind. And how do you reflect on that?
Well, first of all, I don't really think compromise for me. I think in terms of choices, like to really make choices, for sure. That I'm aware of and I'm conscious of, and I think they were truly choices in my life too, you know. But I think the for the two of us, thing one thing that we have also in common is that we are very much of, even though we are engaged, and I think in my case I can say because I'm so engaged with people. In doing portraits, like the kind of portraits I do, that I actually, it sounds on the surface that we are very social, but in fact, we are very much loners. And I never, ever, I don't think I ever felt lonely. And in fact, I'm seeking more and more. And in the last, I don't know, many years, I was like, the minute I was finished with my deep involvement with people that I was photographing, which I'm really 100% involved and focused on when I'm working. But the minute I was finished, I was like craving to just be very quiet and on my own. And I mean, to the point where I did not even want to listen to music, or, you know, because you just needed to be like quiet, you know.
I couldn't identify more with this. I think I always tell people there's an underestimated distinction between loneliness and solitude. Mm-hmm. And solitude is so fundamental to precisely what you call the process part mm-hmm. of, you know, how we live and what we take in. But I do think that's in our culture, in our society, there's such an apprehension of being alone that people don't really learn to be with themselves.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's, for me, definitely the only way I've been able to take in so much of the travels, the experiences, and the projects and the folks in my life is by having these moments of solitude
mm-hmm.
where I can really understand how to take it in and how to, you know, to put it to good use.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the things that you're looking forward to in this new life? Because we've spoken of finding our dream home,
mm-hmm.
maybe even the same home,
oh, but, yes,
you
we
know,
are,
or at least a commune.
We certainly hope to have a compound,
yeah.
compound. But I don't know, because that's the thing also about having had all this great opportunity and liberty and really like a privilege life of being exposed to so much, you know, and such diversity, and that everywhere I go, I'm like immediately fantasizing about finding a place and living there. And but it can be the mountains, and that's where I want to be, or it can be by the lake, or it can be by in a city that I find extraordinary, or it can be in the countryside, or it can be, you know, by the ocean. I mean, anywhere that I found beautiful. I'm just, it's just like, so that's the thing about like, that's also like a put a limit actually, because when everything is interesting, I mean, it's harder to like
make choices
because I never had to make a choice. I mean, and I never even made a choice to move to America. It just happened a little bit by chance, and then, but I never really had to make very, and also the thing about this very, I mean, I'm just speaking for me, but thinking about, like, it's a very selfish life in a way so far, because I've been making all these hard choices of being on my own, not having kids, for example. And but when I see you relate different, I mean, the relationships that people have with their children, I mean, you know, because you are close to a lot of young kids in your family, but it's a different type, the relationship you make with people that you meet and work with and even love are different than relationship you have with your kids, and the difficulty also and incredible rewards of having kids or being in really long-term relationship, like really committed relationship for a long time, and what it means and the way you have to learn, makes you learn about yourself, about others, and you stop having silly, you know, romantic and expectation of people being a certain way, and you really have to deal with like what life is and what it is to share with someone and to raise kids and to love them and all of that. I mean, it's like something I don't know. And so I think it's also hard to see the life of others and understand it deeply, even though you know about it and you read about it, like you,
but not experience it.
But not experience it, what it is, the quotidian. I mean, I think what I mean, what I'm just trying to say, I guess, is that I don't know what it is to have a quotidian life, which is what most people have, you know.
And in that way, I think you and I share this. It's almost as if we have an apprehension of boredom, you know, and associate the quotidien and routines and some of these, you know, kind of social frameworks, like, you know, people who have families or kids or whatnot. We, I guess, the two of us agree on, you know, have the sense that it's associated with a lack of exploration and a lack of curiosity, in a sense, you know, that an end to this way of life that we've put together.
It's just like, given the choice, you know, that's not what we choose. But I don't really think that other way of life is boring at all. It's just that it's not what attracts me. But I'm realizing, and more, it's like all other experience, like really experience when you are. I'm thinking about that because I was just reading a book about this extraordinary woman and her experience during World War II, and I was somebody I met recently, and I was just realizing I was not exposed to any of that in my life, in like very hard situation of life and death or deep deprivation or extraordinary circumstance where you are put in, where you have no choice, where your liberty is taken away, or you are humiliated, but you have to like keep your dignity, or all kinds of things that you read or see, you know, in documentaries or in meeting people, but you never have experienced any of it. So in a way, you have been like so not only privileged in all the things we talked about before, but privileged because you have not been hurt in a very deep way, or we put in situation where really you have to decide things that are, if not life and death, I mean certainly like character defining, and so I mean I don't know why I'm telling you that, but it's just because I was like in the midst of reading these two things, but so you know that you have not in a way. You have been very privileged in all level. You know, you may have missed things that you choose not to have, but then you also don't really know what you would be. I mean, in very strong circumstances. You know.
One question I've been dealing with also over the last few months is this notion that as we age, there's this sense that we understand less and less the world around us as we see more and more. There's almost a paradox between having done more and having more experience and having seen more things and places and people, but also I getting this sense that we understand less. Mm-hmm. That's definitely something I've been confronted with. Is this something that you find is also something you're dealing with?
Yeah, I think everybody will, I mean, everybody that is thinking and feeling and is feeling that, of course, yeah, because that's what I was saying. Like, even though we had like extraordinary life exposure to so many things, it's still a tiny, 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 small portion of the real world, you know? So of course, as soon as you raise your head above what you know and what you are used to, no matter how diverse that is, you realize that there is all these other lives and world around that you, even like very close to you, that you don't really know or have not yet really be curious about or have not been exposed to. And yes, and you realize you know so little about the world and people at large, you know, or like extraordinary is the depth of people, goodness or generosity or resilience or on the other hand, cruelty and evil. Depravity. And I mean, it's like so enormous. And also, and you select as you go along, you like protect yourself of things you don't really want to be exposed to or you try to avoid or, but yeah, no, you know, I mean, if you look and if you think, and of course, the older you get, you realize that there's so much, you know, mm-hmm. that you don't know, you may never know, but I mean, it's good to try to remain completely open.
One of the things you and I have discussed over the years is, you know, the need to, for instance, to make sure that technology is equated with humanism. Mm-hmm. You know, we've always, you know, had a lot of curiosity. You and I have spent a lot of time in Silicon Valley and speaking to a lot of the people who are shaping the technology that really drives a lot of our lives. And we've always spoken of how the need for culture and the need for humanism really needs to be at the center of these, you know, these leaders, you know, thinking. And that's something I've personally become more and more concerned with, you know, the lack of humanism and the lack of deep understanding of culture being at the heart of people's lives. But that's, you know, I'm hoping there's, you know, layers of leadership, you know, within those worlds also who do understand that technology is only as good as it, you know, helps people's lives and, you know, makes people's lives better. But I was just curious that because you're always in between culture, science, and also the circles of power, whether they be in, you know, just like I circulate between, you know, those three worlds, you know, we also understand that the leaders of, you know, corporations or, you know, public bodies have to understand these things, but we're also in a world that isolates people and that, you know, celebrates narcissism. So I'm just interested in the variety of people that you come across these days. But I think it's, you know, having an artist outlook mm-hmm. on what that world is, yeah. is always interesting too, because it is, you know, human beings yeah. impacting other human beings' yeah. life.
But I think, I mean, a lot of people that I know and including myself come out of this moment with actually wanting to limit all this technology, you know, in our life. That, of course, I mean, if I envision myself like being like one of these places that we love and, you know, all I want to be is like make like a, almost like a little bit of a retour à la nature, you know, mm-hmm. but with like really good Wi-Fi, you know. I mean, it's like we don't want to like give up on any of these things, but like put more, it's more precious to at this point to have like real connection with people or with animals or with nature than it is to be like constantly like connected to the rest of the world, you know, and at your I would say not local level, but you know, like you, we don't need, I mean, I never felt that, so I'm not a very good, cannot talk about it so well, but because I'm not a consumer. And so like when I see like this constant innovation about like faster, like everything delivered within like the hour to your which is, a lot of people care a lot about that in cities. I mean, at least in America, like how fast can you get like your food or your book or your whatever, you, or how many offering on your different platform you can have, all of that. I mean, to me, I want to like reduce all of that, like make it like leaner and leaner. But and also, I mean, things should not profit only to like the 1% of the population, you know. So for sure,
very much in the way that, you know, I think the paradox of this digital age is also the fact that we have access to everything, but we choose so few things, and so many people choose the same thing. So you talk about books or, you know, music or film and whatnot. I think that it's the first time in history where we have access to, you know, the entire history of art. But, you know, so few people go into the depth of, you know, understanding where things come from.
Yeah. But on the other world, it's also like this extraordinary thing where people can find any information and study in depth subjects just by looking online and researching online things that they could never have access to, you know, like that it is archive or, you know, like really. So there's so many great things, but the majority of people are not using that. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's very limited use. What are some of the projects that you're working on in the near future? Can you talk a little bit about your project of doing a retrospective?
I mean, I'm in a bit of a dilemma because in order to do the retrospective and the book, I need to be close to my archive, and which is, my archive is very extensive for like, I don't know, 40 years of, you know, work. But, and I need to be there physically because it's not just also, there is a lot of things that are digitalized or digital to start with, but there is a lot of things that are actually, you know, still on film. And also I need help because I don't really know my archive so well myself. And you need, and then you were talking about how good it is to have a real collaboration and people to work with, and I have an extraordinary team, but all of that is in New York. So all my idea of like being somewhere else, primarily somewhere else, is if I want to do this project of a retrospective of my work, books, exhibit, I have to be somehow in New York. And to do it, and to do anything good on that level, you have to be there a lot, and it's a long-term project. So that's a question. That's a dilemma. And but otherwise, I mean, I'm still, you know, very, I mean, interested in, like, I was asked to photograph this great artist who is in her 80s, Sheila Hicks, that live in Paris. American artist, but lives in Paris since 1960 something. I just did that a few days ago, and it was just like a great, great, great joy to do that. And I'm going to do a stories to help me about the FRACs in France, which is, you know, like art center, each one for a region of France.
But so, I suspect that's an alibi to just travel through France.
Absolutely. I mean, it's just like, a great luck for me to be able to like an excuse to go to many different parts of France to see this art center. And then I'm always working on the Miu Miu Woman's Tale, which are these movies that Miu Miu is doing with a woman director and writer. And the next one is going to be shot in Marseille. So I'm thrilled to have another occasion to go to spend time in Marseille. And you gave me all this great information about Marseille because I've not been there in a long time. And then the entire month of June, I'm going to work on Martin Scorsese's new film. And for that, like also I've never been, I'm going to be in Arkansas, like basically all, not in Arkansas at all. Sorry, yeah, I got mixed up.
For the West.
In Oklahoma.
Yep.
Sorry, somehow I was thinking so of Arkansas excited. For something else. So yeah, I will be in Oklahoma for like the month of June, which is also a complete novelty. And that will be interesting. And and on and on. I mean,
and then back in July, we go to Guétari.
Yes.
We go surf in Guétari.
Yes. I mean, I would go and watch her surf.
Yes.
Guétari. And yeah, I mean, so there is many things that are still going to, I mean, some really work, like chosen for work, but some not. Like Guétari will not be for work, so.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Brigitte. I think Marion has prepared a fun lunch for us.
Yes, I hope so.
We're almost done.
Oh, good. Okay. Good. Merci.
Merci beaucoup, Brigitte.
Merci. Thank you. Goodbye.